Please stand by. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Developing IMS Java Transactions, a Practical Approach. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how IMS Java supports growing business requirements by providing a complete Java development solution for processing both IMS transactions and IMS databases. The speaker for today's teleconference is Kenny Blackman, Advanced Technical Support IMS Specialist. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to our speaker, Kenny Blackman. Please go ahead, sir.
Today's teleconference, we're going to talk about IMS Java, particularly IMS Java transaction programs, and how we could use those in IMS Java runtime environments. So let's move to slide 2 and review the agenda. What I want to cover today is kind of give you a background on Java itself as a development language, and then we'll move into IMS Java and its class libraries. What is it? How we could use it? We'll talk about the Java API for dependent region processing, and we'll focus on IMS Java API for database access. The key with this is that you want to access your IMS database, and we want to show you the Java programming techniques that could be used to help you leverage your existing databases. In conjunction with this, we'll talk about the DLI model utility, how that comes into play. And what I want to cover for you today is the APIs regarding version 9 of IMS, version 10 of IMS, and the changes what we're providing now with version 11, which is just announced. And through this, I'll have a little sample application trying to give you some ideas of our programming model. So let's move to slide 3. Quick Java review. As you know, we need to have .java source files. That's the code we want to begin with, and we use a compiler, Java compiler. So we'll do a Java C compile to create a .class files. It represents the bytecodes. After we've got that, we have a choice. We can either take and put those into a zip file or a Java archive file, combine those together, or we just use the .class files. Once we've got the data compiled, the next thing we need to do is load up a Java virtual machine, a JVM running on ZOS, which is where IMS runs. And so when I set that up, I'll set up a class path for either pointing to the jar files I've created or the .class files using the OMVS directories. And as we go through the presentation, you'll see how those class paths come into play for IMS Java. On slide 4, I want to review some IMS Java solutions we have today. As you know, IMS is a transaction manager, database manager system. We have IMS application programs today written in COBOL, PL1, Assembler, a variety of language. We also now provide Java as a programming language. The other thing that Java comes into play is we provide a TM resource adapter. This is Java code that you could use to leverage existing IMS applications, including new Java programs you're going to run in IMS Java dependent regions. This allows you to build new SOA on-demand applications for leveraging your IMS transactions. On the other side is we have applications who want to have direct access to IMS databases. So your CICS, your DB2, and your web application server environments. And I'll talk about how we can also leverage that technology. So slide 5, the IMS Java drivers. On the slide, what you see is we provide different runtime environments. In the case of IMS TM, we have Java dependent regions, a JMP, a Java message processing region, a JPP, a Java batch processing region. In the case of a CICS, a runtime environment, where CICS provides a JVM. We have access into IMS databases using our IMS Java classes through the draw interface. With DB2 stored procedures, I could choose to write my code in Java and leverage, once again, our DB resource adapters. And also with WebServer Application Server on the ZOS platform and distributed platforms, I have a way to use our Java drivers to access those IMS databases. So up on the right-hand corner, you say I have IMS 9 and 10. Those are the Java drivers that support our JDBC 2.1 interface. So I could use those in a Java-dependent region, a DB resource adapter for running in CICS, DB2, or WebSphere, and a distributed DB resource adapter when I run on a distributed WebSphere application environment. What we're introducing with version 11 is our open database APIs that support JDBC 3.0. And then we have three new universal drivers, a universal driver for DB resource access, a universal driver for JBC access, where I can use type 2 or type 4 connections, and a universal driver for accessing DL1 data. So let's move to the next slide. JDBC explained. JDBC is Java's API for accessing relational databases. It's a standard API that all Java database managers can support. This API provides a way for you then to send SQL statements to an IMS database and process the results. So the steps we go through to create a JDBC query are establish an opening connection to a database, execute a query and obtain the results, process those results, and close the connection. So moving on to slide 7 now, in the case of IMS, our JDBC API for IMSDB, we need to provide a way of mapping then the JDB access to IMS access. So we have to have a mapping for when I connect to a database. Essentially what I'm doing is allocating a PSB, and then I need to provide the calls and the covers, the IMSDB calls, to leverage the IMS database, or get hold unique, or get unique, get hold next processing. So those applications that we have today that leverage IMS DL1, we want to provide that same capability through our Java interface. So we'll provide Java objects then to represent the SSA list so we can build those second search arguments to navigate through the database. So on slide 8, regarding our universal drivers, like I said, these are introduced with version 11 of our product. And what they allow us to do is use type 2 and type 4 connection processing. The other thing we've done with our universal drivers is we now support the DRDA protocol. So leveraging the DRDA protocol, I could flow across TCP/IP, come through IMS Connect, and use our new Open Database Manager capability to have direct access to IMS databases. I could be on the same LPAR or across LPAR boundaries if I'm running within a side of the ZOS Plex. I have on slide 9 a chart that just kind of gives you a summary of those capabilities and compares those programming approaches. Essentially what you're looking at is in the case of the universal drivers for IMS 11, I have a type 2 connection, which is local, where I'm running next to the IMS database, or I have a type 4 connection where I'm going to go across TCP/IP network protocol. Let's check a look at slide 10. What I want to cover here is IMS Java class libraries. These are the libraries we've provided for you as an application programmer to help you leverage Java as a programming language, and then we will provide with our class libraries the code that will extend that request down to the interface that IMS knows and supports. So in the case of a JC resource adapter, that's for those runtime environments where I have a J2E application runtime environment. That would be Webster Application Server in the case of IBM. Our JDBC driver, that's the code interface that we use to provide and leverage then using JDBC API access to IMSDB. That environment is available in IMSTM environments, the CICS environments, and DB2 store procedures. It's also included then with the JC resource adapter in the case of Webster Application Server. So from there, we're able to take the SQL request and parse that down and do processing then against the IMS database. I'll show you later on how we support XMLDB and XQuery support. So once I have the SQL parsed, then I'll be able to go down to the database API, and from there use the Java Native interface to go into either AR to DLI when I'm running in an ODBA managed environment, CE to DLI when I'm running in an environment that supports the local Type 2 connections interface, and then AIB to DLI interface. From there, I'm able to get to the assembly language interface to access IMS. All right, on slide 11, what we want to cover is the notion of SQL and IMS concepts. As we know, IMS is a hierarchical structure, and we use a DBD to give a hierarchy mapping. So in the case of IMS, we have segments, and we have segment instances, segment keys. So when I look at a IMS database, I look at a segment. In the case of our IMS Java classes, we view a segment as a table. The fields, then, that are in that IMS segment that are defined either in the DBD or in the COBOL CompuLib, those fields, then, in the case of SQL, represent columns. So our Java classes, then, we have a way of mapping, then, the segment to the table and the fields to columns for you to process. And we'll see how this comes into play as we start looking at our sample application. So on slide 12, then, the steps we need to go through to build an application is we need to have a DBD, a database definition that gives us the hierarchy as far as what the database looks like. The PSB, the program specification block, we need to have the information that says what segments that I've defined in my DBD can I process, what I have access to as an application program. And then we need to add the field information, says what's the data that I have within the IMS database I want to process. Having those three pieces of information, we're able to create then the IMS metadata that we need for our Java classes so we know how to interpret the request and navigate through the IMS database. And we'll see how we pull those together. Based upon that information, we'll show you how you could use the DLI model utility to help create what we call a DLI database view. This gives us that metadata, which is a combination of the DVD, the PSB, and the fields. It also creates a Java report, so your Java programmers can use that report as the way to figure out what I need to do, what's the name of the segments, or tables, and columns or fields that I have within my IMS database. Once I have that piece of information, then we're able to write a Java application program, compile it, execute it, and do some debugging. So, building this application in the case of IMS Java application programming, we'll see that as an application running in a TM environment, we need to have input-output messages. So we'll talk about the IMS field message class that we have that helps you using Java technology to define the fields for the input message and the output response. We'll also go into the database layout, so we'll see how we can subclass DLI database view Java classes to help us then represent what the structure of the database looks like in Java terms, and also then what the segments look like in Java terms. And then from there, then we'll write an IMS application program. So on slide 14, what I have is the database that I want to use for our sample today. We're going to be using what we call the dealer database. You can see in this hierarchy then I have the dealer segment, which is the root segment of my database. I have a model segment, and underneath that it has order, sales, and stock. So that's my segment hierarchy I have within my database. So on slide 15, I have then this, the code snippet represents the actual segments we defined and the key fields. So in this example, what I have here is that my DBD, I have defined those segment hierarchy. I've defined the fields represent the keys. I have not defined any other fields within the segment. So we'll see how we'll have to use COBOL copybook information to help us map out the rest of the fields in the segment itself. Slide 16 then represents the PSB that I want to use as far as accessing that IMS database. So I have a PSB name of my dealer PSB, and I have one PCB in this case, one database PCB, with the name of my dealer PCB. And you notice I have language equals Java. That's what we'll be using then as far as specifying the PSB when I do the PSB gen, and we'll talk about that later, see how that comes into play regarding how IMS itself, when we get a message on the queue, we know that what we're scheduling now is a Java program as opposed to a COBOL or a PL1 program. So you can see what I've set up is the segments to be accessed will be the dealer, model, and order segments for processing. On slide 17 that I have then is a comparison of COBOL, SQL, and IMS Java data types. I have this in here for your reference information. So as you start looking at what it takes to look at a COBOL copy format, defining the fields and the data types within those fields, what our IMS Java data type supports as far as SQL, and then what the actual map into a Java data type is for processing. So we'll see as I go through my examples how we use some of this mapping. Slide 18, this brings us to the issue of what we need to do to get from the IMS world to support SQL and JDBC API through Java. Essentially what we need to do is we need to look at our hierarchy, in this case our dealer, model, and order segments. When you look at the fields within those that are defined in the DBD itself, and the additional field information we have, and from there we need to start using the IMS Java classes, the segment information that gives us the hierarchy, the structure of the database, so we can represent the segments as tables, and we need to use the DLI type information and say, here's the type of information I have, those fields that I have within the segment. Part of that will also be the type of data it is, the type of COBOL data, and how does it map to Java. So let's move to slide 19, and we'll give you an example. In this case, what I want to do is define the database segments, tables, and the fields of the columns. So I have here the dealer segment. As we know from the DBD information I had earlier, I have the segment name is dealer, and it has a field name, which is my key field, is dealer number. In my COBOL copybook, I have a dealer ID, a dealer name, and the dealer address fields. So what I need to be able to start doing is taking those pieces of information and start defining in my dealer type info, in this case for my dealer segment. I'll have to do this for each segment I have in my hierarchy, so I would also have a mapping for my model and my order segments. You can see as we go through here and identify the data types I have, so like case of dealer ID, which is my key field, that is a integer field. It starts in the first position of the segment, and it's for a length of 4. And then I have, followed by that, dealer name and dealer address. So you can see as I march across and view my segments and define the fields, I have to be able to tell our IMS Java classes where that field begins, how long is that field, and what's its data type. So I have, in this example, integer, and the two fields of character. The other thing I could do then, once I define all those fields within my segment, is I could set up Java alias names. So in this example here where I have DLI segment, I have a dealer table, and that's going to be the name I'm going to use, my Java name. So dealer table will represent the dealer segment that I have defined my DBD, but that's the name I could use in my Java application program. I don't have to adhere to a 1-8 character uppercase only name for programming. I could use alias names. Java alias names allow me to have a more descriptive information as far as processing against segments or tables. And finally, you see the other part I have at the bottom is the segment size, how many characters exist within the segment. So those are key pieces of information that we need to have captured so our Java database processing, we can go through and leverage your existing IMS database. So moving to slide 20, what I want to give you an example here is that I may have fields I need to redefine. So in this example, my COBOL copybook, I have a dealer address field. And what I also want to do is say, well, within that dealer address field, I want to break it down by street, city, and state. So you can see in this example how our DLI type info, our IMS Java classes, we give you the capability then to further define or redefine those fields within the existing field structure to give you more meaningful information of the data you're going to process. The next part I need to have is I've defined a particular database segment, in this case the dealer segment, so I defined the different fields or columns I'm going to use within that. Now the other piece of information you need to lay out is the other segments in the hierarchy. What does that hierarchy structure look like? So we have our DLI segment information, helps me identify the different segments within the database. Once I have this in place, now what I also need to do is represent that dealer database view that I want to create, but also match that then to the PSB and that PCB that I have for processing. So you can see in an example then where under dealer database view, I have appointed to the name of my actual PSB, and I have appointed to the name of my actual PCB I want to use within this PSB. And once again, just like I had for the segments, I could also create a Java name for my PCB. So rather than calling my PCB my DLI PCB, what I want to do is create a name called dealer tab. So for my Java programming, I could use dealer tab to represent then the PCB within my PSB for processing. You can see that if I have to go through every single one of these segments and process and define these by hand can be quite tedious. So on slide 22, what I have is DLI Model Utility. This is a free utility that you could download from the IMS website. And what it does is it's going to take existing PSB DBD information, parse that information, and help you start generating the DLI database view. It also you could pull in as the COBOL and PL1 copyright information to help you further define the different fields within each segment. Once I had that in place, then from there I could generate then the Java metadata classes or DLI database view that I need, and also I can create that Java report my Java application programmers can use to help them code application programs. So on slide 23, what I have for you is I use Rational Developer for System Z for a development environment. So I could take the DLI model utilities GUI plugin, which I could download from the IMS website, install that into REZ, and from there then I can have a pictorial view representation that shows me what does my database look like, and then I could take and do the plugin generation to create from the DVD and PSB and the Cobalt Copy Lab my DLI database view. So on slide 24, the next slide, I have a picture here that shows you what a Java report looks like. Kind of gives you an idea where I had the class name. In this case, it's called Dealer Database View. The package was in. The PSB I was using, My Dealer PSB. And then for the PCB, it shows you Dealer Tab. So that shows you the Java mapping, the Java name that corresponds to the actual PCB name within the PSB. And for a segment, we have dealer table then, which corresponds to the Java name we specified. So I could do this then for each segment in my hierarchy. So I have here the segment table for dealer, segment for model table, and also for order table. All right, now that we've got established for us the database view information, my IMS Java classes now know what does the database look like from a Java perspective. We know the hierarchy of the database, which segments are in that path. We know the PSB values we want to use as far as what segments I can process. We have a mapping in of the field types within that segment. So now we have all the piece of information we need to start building an application. So on the next slide, slide 25, we're going to establish a connection. So the first thing I need to do in this case is load the IMS Java JDBC driver into my runtime environment. And once I have that in place, then I can go through and load my DLI database view to establish a connection. So I have a code snippet here. It shows where I do a class for name to load in the IMS driver. And then I do a connection. In this case, I'm doing a connection to DLI database view. That's the database view we created using DLI model utility. And what I want to show you in here is that mapping once again is when I do the connection, what I have to do is establish a relationship between the database view and the actual PSB I'm using. So you'll recall when we were going through, when we were creating our database view, we had specified the PSB name, we had specified the Java PCB name, and the actual PCB name we had to use. So I do have my mapping then from the segments and fields and the database and the PSB I've defined in the database view with my existing PSB that I have generated for IMS. Once I have the connection established, then the next step is execute a query. So on slide 26, I have an example here of where we're doing a query request. What I've decided to do is I want to select some fields from my dealer segment and my order segment. So in this case, I want to get the dealer name and the last name from the order table. So when I look at this, you break this request down. On my select statement, identify the dealer table, which is my dealer segment, and I specify the dealer name, which is the field I want to retrieve data from. And I also specify the order table, or the order segment, and I specify last name, which is the field I want to retrieve from. On the from statement, you see I have dealertab.order. When I specify dealertab.order, I'm identifying then how far down in the path, the hierarchy path, I need to go as far as retrieving data. As you'll recall, we had in our request that dealer model and order were our segment hierarchy, so I have to figure out how far down the path I'm going to go for processing. So identify that. On my where clause, here I specify key values and use those then to navigate through the database. So on the where clause, I identify on the model table a particular manufacturer's suggested retail price, and I also want to qualify on the order table date. I have a date range from 3/14/2008 to 3/31/2008. So given that piece of information, then, we're able to figure out how to navigate through the database. And once again, I want to show you, then, that we have relationship from the from clause where I have dealer tab. That's the Java class name that maps to and corresponds to my dealer PCB, which is actually defined in my PSB gen. So once we execute this query, we're going to get a result set and process that through that result set. So on slide 27, what I want to show you then is that here in the case of SQL parsing, we have the select request, dealer name, dealer table, order table. And from there, our IMS Java classes are going to be able to create an SSA list. So I'll have the SSA arguments for doing a get unique call on dealer, model, and order. I'll take the where clause information, and that gives me the key field information I need in order to construct the SSA to properly navigate through the IMS database. So in this case, I'm, say, navigating, pulling fields from dealer, model, and order. And you'll notice that in the SSA list, our Java classes, we're going to put a D command code in there. So that sets the fact we're going to do an IMS path call. Recall then, in the case of processing IMS databases in the PSB and the PCB gen itself, in that PCB option, I need to have specified a P for path call. So a combination of the P for the path call in the PCB and the D command code in SSA allows our IMS Java classes to navigate through the hierarchy and retrieve the path information to the hierarchy. So when you think of IMS and you look at our DBD hierarchy, our, quote, segments or tables, in this case, dealer, model, and order, you could view those as all pre-joined tables. Because the DBD has established a relationship between those segments, that's how we could pre-join that. And because of that, that's how we're able to navigate through and do a path call through the IMS database. Now, the nice thing about this, then, is that this gives us some performance benefits. So what we will do, then, is we will only search on those DBD fields where we have the key field defined. So we won't do runaway query requests for this processing. And the other thing is, because our DBD has already set up a pre-join of those tables, we will then not support a table join crossing hierarchy boundaries. We'll take advantage of the DBD and use that as a way for that join processing. So that also saves the performance problems. All right, so looking at the Java result set types, we have our choice. We could do forward only, which is the default value. In each case, what happens here is every time I do the next call for a result set, I'm going to make a deal one call to retrieve the data from the database. So type forward only, that would be our default request. Another type is scroll insensitive. And here, once again, we're going to make a call every time you execute the query. We're going to do a deal one call to retrieve the data from the database, but we're going to cache those results. And so as we go through and process those, we'll cache those results. We're always able to get to the next one. I could also do a previous. I could back up a result set. We could also do position to an absolute or relative position as far as navigating to the scroll set for processing. So on slide 29 now, when I look at this, then for processing result sets, you can see that as I get the results back, I could pull out from that result set object the strings of data I want. So in this case, I have a string name, a dealer name, the results, I want to get the string, the dealer name, and I have the string name for order name, and I want to get the string then for the order last name field. So those two fields I selected on my select clause are the fields I want to retrieve out of the processing of the result set. Now you'll notice, though, that in the I.O. area itself, the application I.O. area of our Java code that we've done, because we have to do a deal one call, right? We do the unique call, we specify the I.O. PCB, and we specify the I.O. area and the SSA to capture those results. Our I.O. area has a path call area, so we're going to have information from the dealer segment, we're going to have information from the model segment, and we'll have information from the order segment. We'll just return back to you from that I.O. area, though, those fields that you've selected in your select statement. Now, the other thing to do, looking at slide 30, is do a data type conversion. So our Java classes, we provide then different Java methods you could use. So as you retrieve the data and you're processing the get results classes, you could pull out and you could convert then the data types you want. So I just have on this chart then a listing of those functions we provide, those methods we provide you could use then as you process through those databases. All right, let's look at slide 31. Another aspect as far as the result sets is concurrency. I can have read-only, which is our default value. What I'm going to do is just read the data from the result set, grab that data and do some processing with that. Another capability we have now, starting with the version 11 in our universal driver capability, is to make a result set updatable. So now what I'll be able to do is leverage then, as I make a request, process that result set, I can make a change within that result set for processing. However, if you want to do this capability, keep in mind that in our PSB and our PCB definitions, we have card-coded in what I could use as far as processing. So in this case, I would have to have a PCB option of A that allows me then to make changes to the database. So for processing in this example, I'd have PROCOP A for update capabilities, and I also have the P to that for the path processing capabilities. All right, now that I've gone through and done all of my processing with the result sets, on slide 32, the next one, you can see I close the connection. I'm finished with my processing now, and I want to end that connection. Now, you notice that I have on the try block, after I close the connection, I have the IMS transaction set transaction for commit. In the case of IMS version 9, that is for Java message processing region only, where I could use that commit process. This gives us a way then to tell IMS to commit that. I will show later on when we get into JMP processing how we've changed that programming model. If I have an exception, if I have an SQL exception when it comes back, I do have the capability then to do a rollback call to back out all my processing. All right, moving on to slide 33, the next series of slides, I just have some examples for you, some SQL keywords we support with the JDBC 2.1 and JDBC 3.0 API. So I can say on the as clause, I can specify that I want to select on a dealer as dealer number, so I can display all the values of the dealer number in a column that'll label by dealer number. We also support aggregates, so average, the count, the max, the min, the sum, and group by. So you can see as a Java programmer who's also familiar with JDBC and SQL API, it's a very similar API to what you have today with SQL processing. Slide 34 also has some SQL keywords where I could order by ascending or descending sequence for processing. I have these slides in there for your reference as you move forward and start programming in Java. Some additional capabilities on slide 35 that I want to talk about are IMS 11 Open Database. We've made some enhancements to the JDBC API to support 3.0 that brings us very much closer now to looking exactly like a query you do to a relational database. We introduced a notion of what we call virtual foreign keys, and virtual foreign keys allows us then to maintain inside of our Java classes the key fields we need to navigate from the dealer segment to the model segment to the order segment. So we know those key information values. So if I want to do select, insert, update, deletes, I don't have to have a where clause anymore. You can just pass into us those values we need to determine where we are within the hierarchy for processing. The next capability, which I already mentioned before, was the updatable result set. So now I can update or delete on a current row as far as do I do processing. Another capability is what we call metadata discovery. As I mentioned earlier, DLI model utility is the way we could create a database view, and that represents the metadata we need for our IMS Java classes to navigate through the database. Well, we support then the metadata discovery API, so those views that are generated by DLI model utility, you can use Java classes then to retrieve that information. Another capability we're introducing now with our JDBC 3.0 support is auto-commit. So I can make updates happen as I navigate through those and process those. So that's a powerful way to really take advantage of the capabilities of update processing using the new capabilities. Now, I'll point out that in the case of our Type 2 drivers in IMS GMP or JPP region or in CICS environments, we don't support auto-commit because IMS Transaction Manager and the CICS Transaction Manager, they provide the transaction semantics and the transaction runtime environment. So we don't need to do auto-commit in those cases. However, with the Type 4 connections and our Type 4 drivers, we could support those capabilities in those different runtime environments, IMS, CICS, DB2, Webster Application Server, as a way then to do auto-commit processing. And finally, another way to govern processing as far as working with result sets is a set fetch size. So now our universal drivers, all three of our universal drivers, we provide you the capability to set a fetch size. How many rows do you want us to process and retrieve back to the application program? All right, so on slide 36, then I have an example of the virtual foreign keys. So what I want to show you in this example is I have an insert call. And what I want to be able to do then is I have, in this case, segments A, B, and C. I have a segment occurrence of A1, B1, and C1. And what I want to be able to do is insert a new C segment, so C2. So you can see in my example here on the insert into the PCB.C, where PCB would represent my Java PCB name or the PCB I have within my PSB, and identify then my tables, A, B, and C, and I have my values. So I have the key field for the segment A, I have the key field for segment B, and I also have the key field then for segment C, but I also have the additional data fields I need to insert segment C. So when I process this request for our Java classes, we will be able to navigate through the database, position ourselves under A1 and B1 segment, and also then the C1 segment, and then insert your C2 segment within that database. So now we have a mapping that's identical then to SQL processing. On slide 37, I want to give you an example of datable result sets. So here's a case where I've done a query against the database, selected my fields, and what I want to do then is, while I'm processing that, I want to update a row. So what I'm able to do then is, I'm going to update a string. So in this case, I'm changing the A segment, and I want to update the field to add A22. So when I do my processing then with this request, if I have auto commit on, the auto commit will occur after I've either closed the result set or I have no more rows for processing that request. But this gives you a more powerful way now to, as I navigate through the IMS database using result set processing, I can make update changes to that request. And on slide 38, the SQL keyword support, a capability we introduced back with version 9 is XML support. What we did is we extended our JDBC API to allow you then to use user-defined functions. So in this example here, I'm selecting first name and last name from a database, but I have the retrieve XML UDF function. What that allows me to do is I go through and process and navigate through the IMS database. When I retrieve the data from the database, what I can do is return that data in an XML format for processing. This was introduced, like I said, with version 9 of IMS, and we carry that support on through 10 and 11. Moving to slide 39, the IMS Universal DLI driver. This is our newest driver we have for IMS version 11. What this allows us to do then is I can now code down to the DLI API if I choose to do this. So we provide Java classes, and we provide the methods on those classes so you can write to a more granular level. So if you choose to not use our JDBC API and our SQL API interface, you can write down to the DLI level. So this is the case, you can create your own SSA list. You can identify the PSBs and the PCBs you want to use for processing. You can set up your own path call information, but you still have to adhere to the rules as far as the IMS database processing, just like a COBOL or PL1 program would do today. All right, so that completes the background of what it takes to create a database access and navigate through an IMS database. I wanted to cover that first because that type of processing is applicable to IMS Java-dependent regions, to a CICS runtime environment, to a DBT stored procedures runtime environment, and to web application server on ZOS or on distributed platforms. So on slide 40, what I want to start moving to now is our IMS TM capabilities, our IMS Java-dependent regions, which we introduced, like I say, with version 7 of IMS. So we have a JMP region, a Java Message Processing region, and a JPP, or Java Batch Processing region. Now, why we chose it is, as pointed out at the very beginning, we need to have a JVM, a Java Virtual Machine, that's running in a runtime environment that's going to be able to take the .class files or the .jar files and process that request. Remember, Java is an interpretive language, so I compiled it and I created my bytecodes. Now what I need to do is look at those bytecodes and convert those then to instructions that match the runtime environment I'm running on. So in the case of IMS, we run on ZOS, so we have to convert those bytecodes to correspond to the ZOS instruction set. And as you can see, too, with this, is you can use our JDBC drivers to access IMS databases. We also provide the capability to use the DB2 JDBC drivers for accessing DB2 databases out of those runtime environments. When I do use DB2 for JDBC access, we do require RS, Resource Recovery Services, to manage the sync point process. We don't require that if you're just going to access IMS databases. That same programming mileage you're familiar with today with COBOL and PL1 and dependent regions, MPP regions, is the same for JMP regions. All right, on slide 41, the question is, how does IMS know when I get a message on the queue for a particular transaction that I need to process that transaction in an IMS Java-dependent region? So there's a couple pieces of information we have. On the application macro, which is part of the IMS gen processing, or if I'm using DRD descriptors in version 10, I can define that relationship. I have the application that says the PSP name, so here's, in this case, I have my dealer PSP, so my dealer PSP defined as a TP program. And over on the PSP gen definitions then, where I have my PSP name of my dealer PSP, you notice I have language equals Java. So when I do the PSP and DBDG information, I have put out the fact I want to use language for Java. So at scheduling time, when a message comes on the queue, the IMS scheduler will look and say, okay, what is the PSP I want to load in for scheduling purposes? We'll detect the fact that it's language equals Java. So when we do that, then we'll know we need to schedule this application in a Java-dependent region, a JMP region for execution processing. Moving to slide 42, one of the things I want to point out to you is a change in the programming model from version 9 and on for version 10.11. In version 9 of IMS, we required you to specify an explicit sync point process. You had to go through IMS transaction and do a commit call. We have changed that programming model starting with version 10, so it's now a standard commit model. So this corresponds to what you're familiar with today for MP programs, where you get the message, you process that message, you insert a response back, and you go back and get the next message. So this is a change if you have version 9 applications today running in Java-dependent regions and you want to migrate to version 10 or version 11, you need to be aware of that could have an impact on your application program. The key is if your application program that you wrote today running in version 9, if they would not do the commit call and expect IMS then to do a user 118 admin to back out that request. If you're expecting that as a programming model, you'll have to change your applications now not to rely on that. You'll have to explicitly go in and specify you want a rollback to be done as opposed to have an IMS do that for you. So on slide 43, then, this is a summation of that migration as far as that programming model, so you need to check those rules. So you can refer to that later on as you do your migration programming. On slide 44, we're going to move into what does it take to define the input-output messages. So, like I said, we've already covered what it took to define the database view and navigate through the IMS database. Now what we're going to do is define the input-output message. So IMS Java, we provide an IMS field message definition. So in from there, you can set up the DLI type information that says, what's the layout of my records, what my field looks like, and once again, identify the type of data. So in this case, you'll see I have request code. And at the integer field, it starts in column 1, it's for 4 bytes. And I have a dealer name field, and that starts in fifth position, and it's a length of 20 bytes. So you can say I go through it, I would just define those input fields that I need to have for processing the input message. So then at the bottom I have the input length, 28 bytes, and IMS Java classes, we support conversational transactions. So in this case, my application is not going to be conversational, so I set false. So that's my SPA value. The other thing I want to point out to you is normally when we write in COBOL or PL1, in defining the input message, we normally define L, ZG, train code, and then data. With using IMS Java classes, the IMS field message, we provide the methods for LLZG train code, so you don't have to define those in your input message definition when you extend the IMS field. You just define the actual data, and then use our methods, get message length, or get transaction code, to obtain the LLZG or train code information. So I have the input message defined. The next slide, slide 45, what I'm defining for you in is the output message, what I want to send back to the requester of the application. Slide 46, what I want to show you is taking that same output definition, I may have a occurs depending on type clause or occurs 100 times in this example. So I have repeating fields. So what I'm going to show you in here is how I could take that repeating field definition I have in my COBOL copybook and correspond and map that then to the IMS Java definition. So I have DLI type information, I have my models, a model type, I give you the starting offset, the length, the total length, so in this case 20, 40, 60 bytes of total length, and then my repeat count, which is 100 times. So that's a technique I could use within IMS Java classes to define then and correspond to repeating fields that have my COBOL copybook. So on slide 47, what I have for you then is in the case of using Rational Developer System Z, I've gone through, I've written my Java application program, and now what I can do is use that utility to create a jar file, package that jar file, and then submit that up to the host environment for processing. All right, so slide 48 then ties it all together. This shows you then, in this example, the application program, JMP programming in this case, that's going to process the message queue, get a message off the queue using IMS Java classes, and then invoke the database functions I talked about earlier to navigate through the IMS database, and then insert a response back for processing. On slide 49, what I want to cover for you then is the notion of writing a Java application, giving a class name, and then corresponding that to the IMS definition. So in this case, I want to run in a JVM, a Java Virtual Machine environment. We have a prop cloud member called ZFS-JVM-AP. In this example here, I have two Java programs, IMS Java Program 1 and IMS Java Program 2. And they have public class information. They have a package name. And what I have for you is in the bottom is an OMVS application path where I'm going to store that actual Java code within my USS system. What I need to have then, the challenging to have, is to correspond and map that name to the IMS application program name that we define in our sysgen. So on the next slide, slide 50, you can see I have this mapping capability. What I've identified in is I've defined in my application a PSP name of Java Program 1. I have a PSP gen name of Java Program 1 with a language of Java. However, like I said, my application I've written and stored out in my OMVS environment is IMS Java Program 1.class file. What I have to have then is a map between the IMS application program name, Java Program 1, and the corresponding class file name. So you can see I set up a path name for Java Program 1 where I identify the path where I would store that application. And as I go through that for processing, IMS can find out where within the OMVS path your application lives and bring that in and load that into the IMS environment. You can also see I have a DFS-JVMMS proclide member. This is the proclide member you identify the class path itself, where the application resides. So since this is a .class file, I only have to specify IMS Java Program 1. On the next slide, where I'm using Java Program 2, my mapping is the same. The only thing that's really different here is now in my DFS-JVMMS member, for my class path, because I've created a jar file, Java archive file, I need to fully qualify and specify the Java program name to .jar file so that on my IMS application environment we can schedule that program to a JMP region. So that's the key aspect of using the mapping definition and the JVM definition to help us find where you put your application program. All right. On slide 52, in the next series of slides, I want to compare to you what we had for version 9 JVM, Java Virtual Machine Environment, and what we have in 10 and 11. So with version 9, we have what we call the resettable JVM, and that was supported by ZOS SDK version 1.4.2. So in this environment, we had the notion of a master-worker relationship. And the way that the application worked then is the application process, when it finished, IMS Java classes would call the resettable function to reset the cache information so we didn't have to tear down the JVM. Starting with version 10 of IMS, we now exploit the SDK version 5. Here we have a notion of shared class cast. We no longer have the master-worker relationship anymore. So on slide 53, what I want to show you then is that now I can have class files or jar files stored in a shared class cache. So in this example, I have two Java message processing regions running. Both applications are parallel scheduled, so they are accessing the same class files. So as I'm doing this processing then, I could go to the shared class cache and retrieve the programs I need for processing within those two JMP environments without having to reload those and do processing. Moving to slide 54, the advantage now is that with SDK 6, which we support with IMS 11, we now have the capability to do just-in-time compiling, where I take those bytecodes, compile those, and keep that compiled information, and I can store that within the cache. So I now even have a more faster response time as far as processing in my IMS Java-dependent regions. And on slide 55, I just want to show you that when I set up these classes of caching, I could specify more than one class cache, and I could have multiple dependent regions sharing those different class caches for processing. So in this example, I have a class cache, IMSJVM1, that's shared by two IMS-dependent regions, and I have another class set up for JVM2 for additional processing in other IMS-dependent regions. All right, on slide 56, moving to IMS10 Java class changes, we are making some improvements as far as your Java application programming. A class called IMS Application Class we now deprecated. So if you've written programs prior to version 10, so if you've written Java programs in 7, 8, or 9, they will continue to work with version 10. However, we recommend that you start removing that application class from your environment and start converting those application programs. Two other classes I have on here, DLI Secondary Index and Secondary Index for DB, those classes have also been renamed and being removed. However, they're used by DLI model utilities, so you should not see an impact to existing application programs for processing. So on slide 57, what I have for you then is an example of when I move to the newer environment for programming, the application class I can remove and the .begin method I no longer need for processing. So I have for you the current and now the modified version of what your IMS TM application program running in the JMP region would look like for processing. All right, when I look at Java-dependent regions, on slide 58, I have an Advanced User 101. One thing that's going to happen as you're processing is you bring up the Java-dependent region, you can get this user admin. And what you could do then is when you look at the IMS dependent region job log, you can do a search for a character string of DFSJVM00. Here's a way I can quickly find through the JVM what is the error we encountered. We'll give the error message that were caught, what exceptions were thrown by your Java application program, and any Java virtual machine error messages. So this is a quick way to find within the JMP region what type of problem you had, and then from there you'll have the admin code information to help you further interrogate your problems. Moving on to slide 59, looking at tracing situations, IMS Java classes, we do provide for you the capability then to set trace levels so you could do further tracing of IMS Java classes itself. We use XML, so we have an XML trace capability. So you would do an enable function to set up the trace, and then you would establish an output stream by either doing a set output stream or a create output stream command. And then when you're finished, you could close that trace. And over on the right-hand side, you see I have different trace levels provided for you, from the least to the most expensive as far as caching information. So at the data level 3, the most expensive one as far as gathering information, we're going to have the input-output, return values, the methods within constructors, and also any buffers that we need for processing the message. And so on slide 60 then, I have for you just an example of what the XML trace would look like for processing. I'll point out at this point that with version 11 of IMS, we're also going to incorporate with our universal drivers the capability for you to do automatic tracing in a Java runtime environment using logging properties file. So here's a way I could take advantage then of not having to change the application program, but I could enable logging in my Java runtime environment using that logging properties. So watch for that as we continue to release the universal drivers capabilities. All right, slide 61, IMS Java Debug. You do have the capability with the JVM running on ZOS environment and in an IMS Java dependent region to do remote debugging capabilities. So there's a Java debugger, and what you'd be able to do is set up a TCP/IP socket connection. And with this, then I could do Java debugging capability working from my workstation. So in my case, where I'm using Ransom Developer for System Z, I could be running inside that environment and doing debug mode and step through my application as it's running on the IMS Java dependent region. Now, as far as IMS support, I've listed on this chart, there's some APARs we need, the version 9 and version 10, and even version 11 GA is one of the APAR for that, that allows us then to utilize the remote debugger capabilities. On slide 62, another situation you may want to look at is COBOL and Java interoperability. Enterprise COBOL does provide a capability for you to work with and access IMS Java classes. So in the case of running in a JMP or JPP region where I have an IMS transaction and where I have PSP language equals Java, I had the capability where I could write an enterprise COBOL code and from there create a main entry point. Then what I could use is use the procedural wrapper capability of COBOL to either access an existing COBOL subroutine, or I can also access Java classes themselves for processing. So Enterprise COBOL provides a powerful way for you to wrap and leverage existing COBOL programs and help you build new application programs that can run in Java-dependent regions, JMP and Java batch processing environments. On slide 63, I just have for you an example of what you would use to configure an IMS Java-dependent region to access DB2. Recall I said earlier that you'll need to have RRS active for processing, and this just shows you how we use the RRS attached facilities DB2 driver, how you need to update the step life information with an IMS Java-dependent region, and you also have to identify then in the class path where the DB2 drivers are located so we can process those with IMS Java-dependent region. And finally, on slide 64, what I have for you is some reference information, some place you can go to as far as information on IMS Java itself. The best place to go is go to the IMS website, www.ibm.com/IMS, and follow the information of the ISO integration suite. And from there, you get all kinds of information on IMS Java in itself. This concludes the presentation. Now I'll turn it over for questions.
Thank you, Kenny. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment. How was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And again, we'll pause for a moment. What version of IMS are you currently on? If version 10, press star 1. If version 9, press star 2. If version 8, press star 3. Or if version 7 and below, press star 4. And again, we'll pause for a moment. For those of you not on IMS-10, what is your planned use of IMS-10? If you plan to install IMS-10 in the next 6 to 12 months, press star 1. If you are interested in moving to IMS-10 within the next 2 years, press star 2. Or if you are not interested in IMS-10 at this time, press star 3. And we'll pause for a moment. Hope that you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And we'll pause for a moment. That does conclude our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I will turn the call over to Mr. Blackman while we wait for your questions. And again, that is star 1 if you have a question today. And we'll take our first question from Greg Swanson with Northwest Airlines.
Kenny, I had a question for you. You mentioned that in the PSBs, I believe you said that the one of the parameters is lang equals Java. So if we have existing PSBs that we're using, is that something that would need to be added, or can we use them the way they are?
If you have existing PSBs and you want to schedule in a JMP region, you'll have to creating with language equals Java, because we do set up, like I say, new dependent regions, and that's what we use for the trigger that says, do I schedule this program in an MPP or a JMP region?
Putting that parameter in there, it specifies it's going to be used for JMP.
Right, so instead of saying language equals COBOL or whatever you have in your PSB today, you'd just have a, take that same PSB, create a copy of it, go to PSBGN and specify language equals Java if you want to schedule it in the JMP region.
Question kind of along that lines. You mentioned the DLI model utility, and I have RADZ 7.0 installed now. I was kind of searching around for the, I believe there's a plugin for that.
Yes.
Now, is that out on the website that you mentioned at the end here?
Right. So if you go to the IMS website and you go to the IMS SO Integration Suite, that link, and there you'll see DLI Model Utility, and you can just follow that link to the plugin. You can download then.
Okay.
But actually, you could install that in RDZ, RAD. You could also install it if you have, you know, the base Eclipse.org.
Okay.
We'll take our next question from Carl Nelson with County of Riverside.
Yes, could you differentiate on the functionality of the Java drivers between version 10 and version 11?
Yeah, the main thing we're doing with version 11 with universal drivers now, I mentioned the virtual foreign keys. That's one of the significant changes we're making to simplify the JDBC API, the SQL calls you're going to make. The other thing that you'll see is, and I mentioned, it's the Type 2 and Type 4 connectivity. The Type 4 is really comes into play with version 11 of IMS, because what we'll be able to do is our Type 4 driver running on either WASI or distributed platform, wherever we're running, we're going to use TCP/IP protocol. And what we'll do is we're going to be also using the DRDA protocol that exists. So we'll exploit that, and we'll go through IMS Connect to have direct access to IMS DB through what we call the ODBM Open Database Manager. So the universal drivers, there are more powerful capabilities as far as navigating through there. And it's my understanding we'll be looking at how we could ship the Type 2 universal drivers to a version 10 release. That's under investigation right now.
Thank you.
And we have no further questions at this time. As a final reminder, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question today. And it appears we have no further questions. Mr. Blackman, I'll turn things back to you for closing comments.
All right. Thank you all very much for taking over, participating after the Thanksgiving holiday weekend and before Christmas rush. I appreciate you taking the time to listen into this conference. I hope it helped you out. If you have additional questions, like I say, you have my email address, please feel free to send me an email and we can have further discussions. And happy holidays.
And again, that does conclude today's conference. We appreciate everyone's participation and wish you all a great day.